In the making, this notion of a holy war, a Christian war, we also hear it a lot in Israel in a different context. Religion has never been a friend of women's rights. Religion has been the primary driver through which women's rights have been violated, and the violations have been justified in the name of a higher, a godly principle. So the comments that we are hearing right now, the incredible images that we have seen, should send shivers through the spine of every woman. And I think we cannot but escape wondering how can they then accuse the Iranian government of being led by God, because clearly that's also what they are trying to portray. It is a terrible moment for our global society. That is why Amnesty International is here at CSW, and we're here with a very clear message. We got to resist what is happening.
That is Agnès Callamard, Secretary General of Amnesty International. That does it for our show. On Friday and Saturday, I'll be in Mexico City at Festival Ambulante for two screenings of the new documentary about Democracy Now! Steal This Story, Please. I'm Amy Goodman.
KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through our public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Here goes nothing.
Tune in to KBOO for Drinking from Puddles, hosted by Brandon, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Don't say what you mean. That's Drinking for Puddles, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Yeah.
This is Jacqueline Keeler, and this is E Pluribus Unum, and you are listening to KBOO, a 90.7 FM radio. And today is March 12, 2026, and we are going to be discussing, the focus of the show has always been to what brings people together, right? And sadly, what seems to be bringing people together regarding this Iran war, this illegal war connected by Trump, is particularly on the American right, is the It's a very strange thing. It is actually Christian nationalism and a desire to bring about Armageddon. And I know that sounds crazy, and it is, but it does appear to be the case. And so even though a lot of, a lot of folks will say, newscasters will say, like, oh, the Trump's base is against the war, and that's why they voted for him, or against wars, endless wars. But yes, I've been looking at the polling, and although about 40% support the war overall, and 60% are opposed. When you break it down to Republicans, and particularly white Republicans, it is overwhelming support for the war. And so I want to take a closer look at that. And this is despite a lot of MAGA podcasters and Joe Rogan and folks like that being against the war, right? And using their platforms to say that. And so I would like to take a look at that today. So once again, the number here, this is a call-in show, and so the number here is 503-231-8187. And so, we are presently in the second week of this war, the strikes in Iran, and so today we're discussing a fracture in the American political landscape. It seems to be within the America First movement, right, itself. And even though Trump ran on no more forever wars, right, it's starting to sound like 2003 again, where you have senators like Lindsey Graham and Tom Cotton calling for unconditional surrender. I've seen some of the interviews with Lindsey Graham, and he has just been giddy for this war. It's disgusting. He's obviously not putting himself on the front lines, right? He's putting other people on the front lines, other folks. And we're going to discuss a bit, too, about that as well, the military. What's going on there. So I wanted to talk a bit about also a little update on the war as well, and Trump has called it Operation Epic Fury, or as generally in the social media world, it's being called Operation Epstein Fury. And I don't know if you've seen this, but Iran's official media outlets have actually been doing kind of a meme war, an AI-generated war against. It's happening to the battlefield. It's happening there as well as in blown up oil refineries and children's schools, and it's happening online as well. And that is very interesting to watch. And they are explicitly going after the Epstein files, and I believe they've even hacked the Epstein files. I haven't looked into that completely, but. Oh, and if you've heard more about that. We are 12 days into Operation Epic Fury. It began on February 28th. I know that seems like a lifetime ago, but it was 12 days ago. And it was a surprise joint strike by the U.S. and Israel, which has now started into a full-scale regional war. And they declared success with the death of Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei. The administration tried to pivot to containment, from containment to regime change. A goal Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth reaffirmed this week, even as he warned that strikes are only just beginning. We've gotten very mixed signals, which we went over last week about that, what exactly was going on. And I know that Trump tried to declare that it was over, I think just because of the markets, and he was able to bring down the cost of oil, which I don't understand why they listened to him, right? I mean, why the financial folks listened to him, but this is just going to drag out. I mean, it's not up to him when it ends. Obviously, other folks like Israel and Iran have a say as well. And so we do have some news about the investigation into the elementary school bombing that happened in Iran on the first day. They were found, we haven't found two actually yet. The independent investigations by the New York Times, CBS News, and DBC Verify have already concluded the United States was likely responsible, And I think that the U.S. also found it to be responsible for the murder of all of those children. About 168 people killed in the school strike, which was reported by Iranian authorities, and the majority of whom were girls between the ages of 7 and 12. I know that Trump has tried to say, that Tomahawk missile, and I'm going to do a whole thing about the naming of these things after purported Native American sort of things, like Tomahawks and Apache stuff, all that stuff. I'm going to write about that. That's so irritating to hear. But other countries could have done it. Yeah, it was definitely us. So, or him, his military. And so, so there's been a lot of Iranian casualties. The reports are 1,348 have been killed and over 17,000 injured. This includes folks who have been made homeless and are now subject to horrific air quality conditions with the destruction of oil facilities. And CENTCOM, U.S. Central Command, has confirmed that 7 U.S. service members have been killed in action. And most recently, a service member died from injuries sustained during initial Iranian retaliatory strikes in Saudi Arabia. At least, I think over 140 have been reported injured. And then, of course, they've also hit targets. Iranian counterstrikes using drones and ballistic missiles have hit targets in Kuwait, Bahrain, and Saudi Arabia and the UAE. And they have also sustained dozens of fatalities in the Gulf states. And of course, there have been concerns about mine laying in the Strait of Hormuz. There are narrow strait from which 20% or one-fifth of all oil in the world is transported. And of course, Trump has been claiming they've been attacking these mine laying vessels. But there is a basically effective closure of that strait. And that is due to a number of factors, including issues with insurance, getting insurance to actually do that, those really large tankers in a strait, I don't know, 30 kilometers wide at most, I just cannot dodge any sort of strikes, whether by drones or missiles or by mines. There's just no way they could do that, and I'm sure that ship owners don't want to chance that. But there have been oil has been moving through Iran, so that there are folks who are not working with the U.S., their allies like China can move oil, and they actually have transported a lot of oil. Iran has in the past week, and so oil is still going to China, I understand. And so anyway, So what I wanted to start with actually was that the split in the sort of the podcast rebellion, right? Joe Rogan, he told his 16 million listeners this week that this war feels like a total betrayal of the anti-interventionist platform that Trump ran on, and which, you know, Rogan, of course, rallied his supporters, his listeners, to vote for Trump in 2024. And Tucker Carlson is going even further. He called the hawks of the Pentagon enemies of the United States. Even Natalie Winters, from Biden's War Room, is putting the administration on a 30-day clock before the base turns completely. But are they actually having any sort of impact on the way actual MAGA folks view the war? So let's run the first clip about Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan pretty much ripped President Trump for his war against Iran.
Which just seems so insane based on what he ran on. I mean, this is why a lot of people feel betrayed, right? He ran on no more wars and these stupid, senseless wars, and then we have one that we can't even really clearly define why we did it.
This isn't the first time Rogan's voiced his disappointment about the president, a man he supported and pretty much helped re-elect in 2024. He went off about him on the botched release of the Epstein files.
It looks terrible. It looks terrible for Trump when he was saying that none of this was real, this is all a hoax. This is not a hoax.
On the administration's ICE immigration crackdown.
And I can also see the point of view of the people that say, yeah, but you don't want militarized people in the streets just roaming around, snatching people up, many of which turn out to actually be U.S. citizens that just don't have their papers on them.
What we are seeing essentially is Trump is alienating his bro podcast base. Again, the same base that got him re-elected in 2024. But here's what. While Rogan may feel deceived by Trump, MAGA still appears to overwhelmingly support the president so far. With midterms coming up, you can see Donald Trump is pushing really hard on the SAVE Act. Do you know why he's doing that? Because he knows he won't win if people can vote.
So that was Joe Rogan basically hitting Trump with that. Claiming that this is insane, calling this the insane Iran war, and that was from MS Now, and that you heard Molly Young Fast giving her take on Joe Rogan's latest comments on Trump's war in Iran. And so, is this going to have an effect? Is he going to swing Trump's base, or bring out folks, turn folks against Trump? Is this going to happen in the midterms? And I don't see any movement happening in the polls. There's the support from the MAGA base, or even Republicans, generally speaking, is extremely strong for this war, over 80%. And I haven't seen it change much in the past week or so. And so, you have this tension, and you have on one side, the digital MAGA vanguard, Joe Rogan and such, and declaring this. As it feels like a betrayal of the promise to end forever wars. And you also have Tucker Carlson actually suggesting the U.S. is being led into catastrophe. And let's play the next clip from MAGA allies.
This is Israel's war. This is not the United States' war.
Being a conservative or being a Trump supporter or being part of MAGA does not mean you have to accept another Middle East war.
Over the last few days, some very prominent MAGA voices have been speaking out against Trump's war with Iran.
And so you're seeing this crazed, hysterical, in fact, effort to purge anyone in the conservative movement or MAGA, whatever those are, to purge anyone who had any doubt about the wisdom of this war.
It is absolutely America last. It's the same we've seen. What is happening to the man that I supported, you supported, the man that denounced what happened in Iraq?
From Megyn Kelly, Tucker Carlson, and Marjorie Taylor Greene to Dave Smith, a comedian and podcaster who endorsed Trump back in 2024, but has since said that was a mistake.
Donald Trump has made his bed. Like, this really is it.
And there's already talk about how this will affect Republicans in this year's midterm elections and even the 2028 presidential election.
I hope the Republicans lose the midterms this year. They need to for the country. They need to be destroyed. And no one from this administration can be supported in 28.
Yeah, so that was MAGA allies breaking with Trump over this illegal Iran war. That was put together by CNN about several days ago, and I haven't heard them really the podcasters breaking for the war yet. And they've continued to criticize Trump's war and basically envisioning political ramifications in these upcoming elections. But is that happening? And I'd love to hear from all of you and your opinion on that. And the number here in the studio is 503-231-8187. And if it's not happening, if Trump's base is not turning on him about this war, why do you think that is? And so but I think the next thing I want to actually look at here is is, you know, what we're hearing from the military, right? And so I do have a, one of the things I discussed yesterday on the Wednesday talk radio show was a report about issued by the about Christian nationalism by it's quite shocking to see the results of this. It's called Mapping Christian Nationalism Across the 50 States. It's it's from PRRI Brookings, and what it finds is that roughly one third of Americans qualify as Christian nationalism adherents. So 11% people who really believe in this, and sympathizers 21%, right? And so a majority of Republicans, 56%, now qualify as Christian nationalism adherents or sympathizers. And what does that mean exactly? You know, the questions they asked were these. God has called Christians to exercise dominion over all areas of American society. 23% agree. This was of the total folks they asked. That includes Democrats and independents. The U.S. government, the second question is, the U.S. government should declare America a Christian nation. That's 30% agree. 30% of all American voters that they polled, almost one in three, right? Being Christian is an important part of being truly American. 33%, that is fully one third of Americans that they polled. If the U.S. moves away from our Christian foundations, we will not have a country anymore. 39%. this is cross-party. This is everyone that they polled. 39%, that's 40%. That is almost the same number that supports this percentage that supports this war overall, right? And U.S. law should be based on Christian values. 43%, that is quite high, right? And so what does this mean in the context of support for the war, right? How does this correlate? And they did find there was a direct correlation between support on these very strong yes answers to these questions and support for Trump and support for authoritarianism. And so actually I want to be able to play this next audio just to show that, you know, Tucker Carlson is he's tried to reach out to Trump, right? But he's having problems. So let's play that clip.
He's being shown polling that this war is like a 90-10 win for him. I flew up to D.C. three times in the last month to try to convince Trump not to do this. It didn't work. It happens. I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, boy, this is not going to get better. So then I think I'll fly up again and ask him. I mean, I don't know if anyone else is doing it, so I'm going to try to just declare victory and go home. Like, you killed an 86-year-old cleric. Let's just call that a win and then pull back. And so then meantime, he got convinced to denounce me. So I call over there to see, you know, call someone who knows him to see. I said, I'm just going to fly up anyway and tell him this because I think it's so important. And the person says, don't bother, because he's being shown polling that this war is like a 90-10 win for him. And I said, I don't know where that polling is coming from. It's like, I guess you could make any kind of poll, and it's.
That was Tucker Carlson. That was from the Middle East Eye. So he is basically being told, he has actually flown in person in the last month. And I imagine that since the war started, I'm not sure if he was aware it was going to be held beforehand, before February 28th. But it sounds like he went a fourth time to in person to try to talk to Trump about stopping this war. And Trump did try to end the war at one point, but that didn't happen. And the very next day, you know, they were going full bore again. But he's being shown polling that the war is a 90-10 win for him. And that does correlate with Republican support for the war. I mean, it's a little higher, I think, than the independent polling has shown more like 80% support for the war. But that would correlate strongly with this base that I'm describing here that support Christian nationalism, right? So that's kind of crazy, isn't it? The PRI 2025 American Values study had over 22,000 Americans that they polled, and And they found that, 50, as I mentioned earlier, found 50% of Republicans now qualify as either adherents or sympathizers of Christian nationalism. And so why does that matter for this war in the Middle East? Because the study also showed that direct correlation between these beliefs and support for authoritarian measures and political violence, there is direct correlation, basically. And PRRI found that adherents are nearly three times more likely to agree that, quote, true American patriots may have to resort to violence to save the country. It's a very scary study. And so when you hear podcasters like Rogan or even Tucker Carlson, we just heard from, talk about, you know, this is sort of a strategic problem or tactical errors, as Rogan said, they're talking from basically a secular libertarian viewpoint, right, of the right. But when you have the GOP establishment, you know, like Lindsey Graham talking about good versus evil in Iran, they are speaking directly to a base that views this conflict through a biblical lens, right? And so for this 56% of Republicans, this isn't just a war, it's a mandate. And we're going to get, and I think you may have heard, I think I reported on this yesterday, that basically, and you probably have heard, that U.S. military commanders are telling troops this explicitly, right? Let's go ahead and listen to that. We have, this is an interview between Katie Halper and retired Army Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson and Military Religious Freedom Foundation founder Mikey Weinstein, talking about what high-ranking military commanders are telling their troops.
They are Christians in the military that are being horrifically abused by their chains of command, Katie, for not being Christian enough. They are the Christian version of ISIS, Boko Haram, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, the Taliban. And they are in complete control of the technologically most lethal organization ever created by our species, Homo sapiens, which is the U.S. military sworn oath to protect, support, and defend the U.S. Constitution, which, by the way, Israel doesn't even have. They don't even have a constitution. Shortly after this war began, I believe it was on Saturday, March 1st, in the wee hours, it wasn't too many hours later that we started getting deluge with phone calls from troops from all five branches, both in the CONUS and OCONUS, meaning continental United States and overseas. The stories were different but yet similar, that their supervisors or command chains were showing a very clear degree of euphoria, Katie, glee, and joyousness over the fact that we had engaged in this non-congressionally approved, unprovoked attack. As Larry likes to say, Iran was provoking us just as much as Mickey Mouse was. But they were thrilled because this was clearly showing that we had reached the conclusion shown in their perspective of the end times from the Book of Revelation and Armageddon, and that this was all going to serve as a very useful, if you will, accelerant or lubricant to bring this idea of concept of weaponized Jesus back. And you know, I mean, Christian nationalists are promised a 200-mile-long river, I kid you not, 4.5 feet deep, filled with nothing but the human blood of those that their version of ferocious Jesus has slaughtered at the Battle of Armageddon. We had 110 clients at 30 installations until the story went viral.
Yeah, so there you heard from Mikey Weinstein, the founder of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, about what he's hearing from troops who have called his foundation seeking assistance, over 100 of them, and in 30 different installations. So we have a caller, Tangent. Hi, Tangent, you're on the air. Good morning. I think we lost him. All right, go ahead and call back if you can. And taking a further look at this study, this study was mapping Christian nationalism across the 50 states, and this was conducted between February 28th to December 8th, 2025, and with a probability sample of 20,771 adults. And with over 1,340 state-level opt-in oversamples for a total sample of 22,111 adults, a very large sample. And basically, as I mentioned, they asked those questions, which are statements constituting the Christian national scale. And what they found was that they have a way of sort of scaling and scoring these folks. Adherents are people who overwhelmingly agree or completely agree with all of these statements. So I'll briefly say again, God has called Christians to exercise dominion over all areas of society, American society. The U.S. government should declare America a Christian nation. Being Christian is an important part of being truly American. And the fourth statement, if the U.S. moves away from our Christian values foundations, we will not have a country anymore. And U.S. law should be based on Christian values, which actually had a 43% who agree out of the folks polled. And so adherents are folks who overwhelmingly or completely agree with all five statements. Sympathizers agree, but less likely than adherents to completely agree. And then you have skeptics who disagree and rejectors who completely disagree with all five questions. So, and as I mentioned before, the percent who qualify as adherents were 11%, so a little over 1 in 10 people polled. Sympathizers were 21%, so about a fifth of people polled. And then skeptics were 37%, the largest number, and rejectors 27%. The good news is both of those groups are larger than the other two groups, but still, it is pretty scary that many Americans would completely agree with these five statements, right, which are extreme. And so that's sort of, I believe, is behind the support we're seeing for Trump's illegal war, right? And most of these folks are in the Southeast, right? I think the states I'm seeing here that have the strongest adherence numbers of adherents and sympathizers were Wyoming, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Mississippi, West Virginia, right? And then other states that were less so include Texas and Georgia, both states that the Dems are hoping to swing some of those seats, and of course the rest of the South as well, in Florida and Missouri, and you know, I'm having family in South Dakota. It is I'm sorry to say, also South Dakota, North Dakota, and Nebraska and Montana, which are all states that my dad's tribe, the Dakota Lakota people, live in, and it shows you what we kind of face. In these very rural communities, trying to be heard as Native people, this sort of Christian nationalism. It's an interesting study. It's a bit scary, obviously. And so let's listen to some more about what Christian Zionists envision with this Iran war.
Influential Christian Zionists like Pastor John Hagee are telling their congregations that Trump's war with Iran is actually part of God's plan, and that God is going to militarily assist Israel if Christians pray hard enough. The core belief of Christian Zionists is deeply anti-Semitic. They only want Israel to control all of the Middle East so that way Jesus can come back and send everyone to hell if they don't convert to Christianity. And
Israel is is a land that God gave through Abraham to a people that he chose.
And that land, I think it says, from the Nile to the Euphrates, which is, once again, basically the entire Middle East. So God gave that land to his people, the Jews, or he didn't. You're saying he did. What does that mean? Does Israel have the right to that land? Because you're appealing to Genesis.
Yeah.
You're saying that's the original deed.
It would be fine if they took it all.
A combat unit commander told non-commissioned officers at a briefing Monday that the Iran war is actually part of God's plan, and that President Donald Trump was anointed by Jesus to light the signal fire in Iran to cause the Armageddon and mark his return to Earth. And commanders are pushing the...
I think that wasn't the full clip, but that was some of it there. That was actually from the Humanist Report, And that was looking at how fundamentalist military commanders are taking cues from, of course, Defense Secretary Hegseth, and pushing the idea that U.S. service members, pushing the idea on U.S. service members that the U.S. and Israel's war with Iran is actually a holy war that's necessary to bring about the Armageddon and pave the way for a second coming of Jesus Christ. Even as I say these words, I feel they are completely... And you have to realize that our tax dollars, all the money we pour into this country, is going towards this, right? This, and I don't know if it was, I mentioned this yesterday, but the actual way in which Israel wins is if we, if the U.S. loses, right? And, you know, in Christian Zionism and in the Israeli prophecies, basically, the United States has to lose this war. So, these commanders who believe this prophecy are, in a sense, committing a form of they're actually going in there to lose in order to bring about the second coming of Jesus. You know, they're betraying their country. They're betraying the United States. So it does show that they have, even as this study, the PRRI study, shows that there's a belief, there's this correlation between being Christian and being a nation. To a certain extent, the nation is not as important to them as the prophecy, right? That's their first, that's what they're really committed to, right? And it's completely nuts that we're in this situation. And of course, you heard Tucker Carlson doing an interview there with actually the ambassador to Israel, right? Mike Huckabee, you know, former presidential nominee and governor of Arkansas. His daughter, Sarah Huckabee, is now, Huckabee Sanders is also a governor there as well now. And he, so he's been serving there. And he, I might have played it last week, but, you know, he has not been very helpful to folks trying to leave Jerusalem. Our Israel, you know, American citizens were not given a lot of assistance in leaving the area where that war is taking place. And he is also he's an ordained Southern Baptist minister and an evangelical, and has been had a news he had a talk show on Fox called Huckabee, and later it was run on TBN. What that is really. But he is obviously a Christian nationalist who believes in Armageddon, and he is fine with Israel taking that whole area. And so this is who we have in place there. And so once again, please do call in if you want to join the conversation. You know, how do we reconcile an America First movement when they want to actually engage in a holy war that has really nothing to do with America except the fact that America, they believe in America, it should be Christian, right? And I just can't even get my mind around it. They basically want to bring about the end of the world so that Jesus Christ can return. And they're going to use the United States, all the power might of it to make that happen. And they have everyone in place right now to do so. The number here is 503-231-8187. And, oh, hi, Santiago. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Hi, good morning.
Can you hear me? Good morning. The idea of America being a Christian nation is... it's funny because they'll say that the founders were, you know, deists essentially, but I mean, it was the papal bull of Alexander VI that gave permission for the conquistadors and all the other cats to come over here, because they basically they labeled us as in a negative sense as no different than the trees, the land, or the animals. And that, you know, that it was owned, but, you know, that the land would only be properly owned or in stewardship if a Christian, Christian man or whatever came to conquer the land. And so, I mean, even though like they can, you know, people can argue, you know, historically that, you know, these, that the founding fathers were deists, they were only able to have the permission structure to do what they did via the church in the first place. So, I mean, it's like, I mean, it's, it might seem surprising, but it's literally in the political DNA of the country to be like this. And I think more importantly, like we were talking about yesterday, I mean, it's a mythology, you know. It's like, this is no different than, you know, King Arthur gathering the Knights of the Round to go search for the Holy Grail. You know, for them, it was like this sort of mythological thing that was supposed to bring the people together, you know, some sort of holy quest. But in reality, it was just a bunch of old white men engaging in quixotic adventurism in order to distract people from the fact that they were poor, hungry, and dying. And I think that we have come far enough that we can recognize these things, but we have that even within the supposed opposition party, they still believe in the same mythology that the conservatives do. They just believe in it from a different angle. Conservatives will say, well, you know, America is this land that was provided to us by God, and, you know, it's our holy duty to do whatever. But then, you know, but then the mythology from the Democrats is that this is that America was founded as an experiment in democracy, and, you know, and to see if people could truly live together. And, you know, and then they take all the hard won freedoms that were paid for in blood, sweat, and tears by black, brown, queer, trans, and otherwise other marginalized communities, and they fold it into this, you know, regardless of how hard the struggle was or how much it was fought against by the system, they fold it into this American mythology of freedom. And it's just, we have two parties that are overseeing everything that are both believing in a mythology. It's just that the Democrats look a lot less destructive than what the Republicans are doing, but ultimately it ends in the same way, as if America is this unique and chosen place when it really isn't. It's really disgusting. And while it is endlessly frustrating to see what the Republicans do, we know at this point what Republicans are up to. The problem is that we have a relatively silent, if not completely a completely complicit Democratic Party that's willingly going along with this at the highest levels, and yet giving the voters mixed signals as if to what they support. And I want us to break free of the, I want us as the working class to break free of these spells and start seeing America for what it is. I mean, if you truly believe that Israel is this dangerous settler colonial nation that's bent on, you know, destroying things for a handful of profit, that you know, and that Israel doesn't exist, and the same with South Africa never existed, then you have to be able to view America in the same frame. Otherwise, you're not being logically consistent. It's like, you know, the difference between a cult and the church is just hundreds of years.
That's to bring it back to my book Standoff. But in my book Standoff, I really looked very carefully at the origin stories and the role that plays. And basically, I called it at the time a algorithm, right? A series of attributes that define a people that basically then provide a roadmap for how they will act in any situation, right? You probably heard this, but I'll just briefly kind of summarize it for those who have not. But that, I was contrasting what it meant to be a colonist, right? Because my book really starts looking at the origins of the United States and looking at these corporations, like the ones that founded, you know, the Massachusetts Bay Colony Corporation and the Virginia, London Ventures. These were sort of capitalistic endeavors began in London. Back then, brought people over and friended their stay and their military actions against native people, and then those evolved into states, right? And as I've pointed out many times, even the Mayflower Compact was only signed by stockholders in the corporation, right? This is the very basis of the United States. And so, you know, I found it's a pretty simple definition for a colonist. You know, a colonist is someone who goes out to other people's homelands, occupies them, and then sends the wealth back to their ruling class, to their 1%, right, to the investors, right, back in London. And with that kind of really very simple definition, you can sort of predict what they're going to do next, right, what they're going to do in any situation. And then of course, there's also the element which you mentioned, which is the Doctrine of Discovery, which was explicitly stated, there were two papal bulls that were cited, I think one from 1493 and one from 1550 by two different popes, that I think around the late 1820s, or 1823, actually, in Johnson's versus McIntosh, you know, Chief Justice John Marshall, one of the first chief justices, he basically held up that principle of discovery, whereby only Christian discovering nations have the right to the title to the land, the fee simple title, as the only sort of rights or title that Native people enjoy, the discovered people, right, who are not Christian, is basically the rights to the animals, the right to, you know, and this is still the rights to roam and live and everything, but no title to the land, right? That title immediately, the minute, you know, an explorer comes and lands on the coast and puts down their flag and claims the whole water basin from whatever mouth of the river that he's at, that all goes to their ruler in Europe, right? That the titles, all of that goes to their ruler. And this is still the law of the land today. And I've cited before how in 2005, the Supreme Court, finding written by, what's her name? Everyone loves her. She passed away. But yeah, written by a liberal justice, restates that, reasserts the Doctrine of Discovery by denying title to the Oneida Tribe of New York, right? In Cheryl versus New York, or Cheryl versus Oneida Nation mm-hmm. of New York. And it's both interwoven there. Of course, you know, being a Protestant nation at the time, citing a Catholic legalese was a form of opportunism, right?
It's definitely opportunism.
Yeah, it's just the way.
Because they don't care. They don't care. I mean, right now we have Catholics and Protestants working together within the. Within the Christian nationalist movement, even if they absolutely hate each other, they're willing to work together if they think, you know, that they can get one over on the working class.
Yeah, and so then I contrast that with the, and I had to try to create sort of a similar simple definition of what it means to be a Native people, right? A Native people. I don't use the term indigenous, particularly when I try to deal with U.S. issues, or because I feel like it sort of I want to focus on the political status of Native nations within the United States and their relationship to the most powerful government on Earth, right? So I try to maintain that the specificity. And because technically we're all indigenous to somewhere, you know, it's too broad of a term in any ways. But for our nations, you know, and I know that other nations have different organizational things, even within the Western Hemisphere, much more authoritarian. But here within the boundaries of what is now the United States, I can say that that our nations, our Native nations, were very more egalitarian, you know. And I was having trouble finding a simple definition, and what I finally came to was what I found written by my grandmother's cousin, Vonda Gloria Jr. And it was basically, that a people, he used a capital P for people, their origin story lies in a meeting with a manifestation, a spiritual being who's a manifestation of the land itself, right? And in that meeting, agreements are made, you know, responsibilities were given, you know, kind of what the nature of our relationship is to that specific place on Earth, like not the entire Turtle Island, but that place, right? And for me, that was very, very, that rang true, you know, because those were our instructions. That was our algorithm, was with the agreement made with the place and with the spirit of the earth. And that's very different from a colonial perspective, which is about the objectification of the earth and the taking of it. I see that in the story of the white buffalo calf woman, you know, and where my grandmother, another one of her cousins, Julian Sr., he was our nearest relative growing up, and also her uncle, Vine Deloria Sr., when I was a kid, he gave us a lot of the family stories orally. We were living in the Denver area, he talked to me and my sisters and told us a lot of family stories. So a lot of the stories I learned from my dad's side of the family were not only written down in books, but also given orally. And so, and I did put some of them in my book. That's the first time they've ever been written down is in my book Standoff. And so, what her cousin, told me was that we were not the Lakota or Lakota until we met the white buffalo calf woman. Before that, we were something else entirely, and that really speaks to that meeting what it meant to define us as a people and who we are, and that is just so very different, from colonialism and how that is defining things. So these folks who are really Americans who really. Here to this Christianity idea, they're really driven by a story that is based in a very different idea than Native nations have to our relationship to your place. We met the white buffalo calf woman. She was a manifestation of the Great Plains itself, and she came to us, with visible breath, with the pipe, with the chompa. And she told us how our relationship was going to be with that land, with the Buffalo Nation and all the nations, right? And when we smoked that pipe, which was composed of a buffalo foreleg bone, we became a relative, and we then had responsibilities to all the other living beings and to the land itself. And that is a really different thing than what happened in Jamestown in Virginia. Right, or in Plymouth, in Massachusetts, it's a very different notion of relationship, not of one of domination, but of equality of relationship. And so, I think we just lost Santiago. But if you'd like to call in, please do call in. We'd love to hear your thoughts and about this conflict in Iran. We actually only have 10 minutes left, but please feel free to call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. So that's the number here. And Tangent, are you back, Tangent?
Yeah, I'm back. Hey, how are you?
Sorry about that. I just saw that. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to start with, to these poor, sad Trumpsters out there, what part of he lied to you do you not understand? Okay. Now, as far as all this hype about, I thought this whole thing about Armageddon was in a superior being's hands and not in anyone who simply thought he would just start it up. But he wanted to change the Gulf of Mexico. Now he seems to want to rewrite the Bible. Blessed are the warriors, for they shall disinherit the earth. Oh, wow. I'm not a Christian, I'm a Christ Zen. I like both of these individuals, and I try to follow their ideas. This is horrid, horrid, horrid. Anyhow, that's what I had to say.
Yeah, I think there's very definitely a more humanist and more compassionate take. These folks don't have compassion. They're willingly bombing and thrilled at the death that they're seeing happening, and the complete lack of adherence to any sort of laws of war. We're throwing the Geneva Convention out the window, and as many people have noted, the world order has been completely abandoned, right? The rule of law that that recognizes sovereign nations. I think, I mean, even countries like, I mean, you can hear from Iran and from China, you know, them sort of lecturing, or particularly China's leader just give a speech lecturing America about respecting sovereignty, right? The world order, right? And it's sort of an ironic thing, you know. I think it just shows how far they've gone, and of course, you know, I was going to bring up the fact that, you know, I lived in my husband and I lived in the Chicago area, and when our children were very small, and I was working on a book, and so I had a young woman who would take my kids to the nearest. We lived in Wheaton, Illinois, and so she would take them to Wheaton College, right? And that's a Christian college, right? And they had a huge museum there. What was the name of their really famous? It's a famous evangelical minister who was there, one of their big alumni, you know. And it was this really huge, oversized sort of Greek temple, you know, federal style building right next to the railroad track. It did not look very good or tasteful. But they also had really cheap food at the. So she would take them there, like for ice cream and stuff. But I went to the museum there once, and at the time, they had a whole exhibit about the sort of the rise when America went through these different periods where they became more radically Christian.
Focused on the family, I don't know, one of those.
No, this came with early 1800s. When they became more evangelical.
You ever hear of the Carmelites?
Well, this was a Christian, this is a Protestant thing. What is it called? Where they get all excited and they get all, there's these periods in Christian history, in U.S. history, where that happened. And they were kind of documented. But they open, when you walk in the first exhibit is all about how the founding fathers were not Christian because they were deists, right? And they had a big kind of open book where they had all the different names of all the founders and what colleges they went to and how they all identified as deists and how this wasn't Christian enough for them, right? And they had the Yale class of 1776. They had all of the Yale classes that was all deists, right? That's what it was, a religious, you know, outlook. And so they would describe how this was not a very Christian thing to do, I wrote in my book Stand Up actually about how the rise of sort of evangelical sort of outlook in America really began not at the start of the United States, but when they had taken over my husband's ancestors' homelands in upstate New York. And it was out there, sort of, you know, the what had been for 1,000 years the Iroquois Confederacy. They were now you had all these white people going into there after, my husband's ancestor, Chief Joseph Brant, had lost had sided with the British in the Revolutionary War, and they had lost their lands and up their ancient homelands in upstate New York, the Mohawk Valley and such, and we're now in Canada. These white people were all entering into this lands, but what they were finding was like a civilization, right? And they were shocked that this civilization had existed. They found the remains of a civilization that had been there for thousands of years.
Help or quote unquote of their own, yes. Okay.
Yes, and not in the Bible either, which was completely very shocking to them. And so the way they kind of, some folks describe that these things where they, you know, they kind of, they sort of became really super religious, and this is where Mormonism arose as well, was in upstate New York, was because they were kind of in a crisis about the situation, do you know what I mean? That they could not deal with it, and so they turned to this sort of evangelicalism, right? Mm-hmm. These sort of revivals that they were doing out in the wilderness, right? A wilderness which was not a wilderness. And so... That's sort of where that. So I have a chapter on that, you can definitely check that out. But uh,
the Great Awakenings, that's what they were called, the Great Awakenings, right? Oh, they had the first Great Awakening, and then they had the second Great Awakening in the early 19th century, which was the period in which a lot of these evangelical sort of things really began to take root in American culture and stuff. And so we see it still,
I have something every believer should think about. In, I believe it's Luke, they make a big point of the genealogy of Jesus all the way from King David and such, okay? But my point is that if Mary and Joseph didn't have sex, how did that all that beautiful DNA get transferred into him?
I know. Yeah, I mean, if Joseph wasn't actually his biological father, there's no relationship to, yeah, there's no descent from the house of David. Yeah, that never made sense to me either. And, a lot of the Bible didn't make sense to me. And
I wrote a poem once that goes, State Church killed Jesus Christ because they wanted this teaching iced. I didn't realize the pun that's in there now. I wrote it 20 years
ago. Yeah, that is, oh, wow. Yeah, that definitely has a different meaning today. Well, thank you for calling in. And I think we're almost at the end of the show. But yeah, I think who knows what the show will be about next week? Who knows what will happen between now and then? It just seems to change so quickly in this present time. But thank you for calling in, callers, and definitely, when we see this stuff happening, I just, how do we address it? And I was actually going to discuss more there is a center of conscience in war, which can actually help, members and who are service members who are seeking to avoid deployment. So definitely check out their website. The hotline, the Right of Conscience hotline, is 1-800-379-2679. That's 1-800-379-2679, and they can help. Service members who are concerned about a deployment for a holy war. All right. Thank you so much. I'm Jacqueline Keeler, and this has been E. Pluribus Unum.
You are tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the communication.